with infirmity. So God did not just take Jesus, his son, eternally in the heavens as God, and turn him into a high priest, but rather he sent him down to earth to be the sacrifice for sins and let him taste the taste of what it was like to be a human and let him suffer in real life, in the flesh, as a person, so that when he went back to God to be the high priest for men in the flesh, he was able to have compassion on them. Now, I hate to say this, but if Jesus, who knew everything, didn't ever need to be taught anything, could have understood everything without ever having experienced it, because he was that intelligent and smart, if he needed to suffer to become that person who could have compassion on the ignorant and them that are out of the way, if he needed to suffer, then how much more do we as God's people need to go through sufferings in order to be made somebody who can help bring this world to Christ? How much more? And I believe we've been dealing with this subject quite a bit in this church on the sufferings that Christians experience. And the first and foremost cause, I think, the first places that God leads his people through when he leads them through suffering is purification for sin. But I think a much bigger and greater situation is bringing them into the capacity for service. Because we can become good Christians and never do anything for the kingdom of Christ as far as the sinful human beings of this earth are concerned. God is looking for somebody to go take the gospel to the world. He's not looking at us Christians as somebody that he wants us to have the ability to be able to maintain our Christianity. He's looking for us as bearers of the light to take the light of the gospel to the entire world. So, by reason, this is verse 3, by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. This was the priest, the high priest from the Old Testament. They were like us. They were so compassed with infirmity that not only did they sacrifice for the sins of the people, but they had to actually sacrifice for their own sins as well. And Jesus never had to do that, because Jesus never had any sin. In that, he was very different from the priests of the Old Testament, but in that he was 10 times better than the priests of the Old Testament, because the priests of the Old Testament were men, and the priest that we now have is the very Son of God. So he goes on in verse 4, no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. Now, if you go back to the Old Testament, everything that was given to Israel as a nation concerning the priests was very strictly documented by Moses straight from the lips of God as to who would be the priest, how they would become the priest, and how they were to order the service of the priesthood. And their job, the entire job of the priests, was simply to be a person between God and man. So when man needed to get right with God, he went to the priest instead of directly to God. And as he came to the priest with his sacrifice, the priest took that sacrifice and the priest offered that sacrifice on the altar and made an atonement for the sins of that man, so becoming a link between God and man and and bringing the forgiveness of sins to the people who brought their offerings. Now, let me just tell you something. I wasn't planning to talk to this tonight, and I'm really sorry we don't have a room full of Catholics so they could hear this. But I'll tell you, this is one of the fundamental problems with the Catholic Church. One of them. It's probably not the greatest. But one of the fundamental problems with the Catholic Church is they are still living in the Old Testament ideal of the priests, where their ministers still stand between God and man as the one who brings about your salvation. Well, all that changed as we came to the New Testament, and the Old Testament was laid aside, all that law, all those sacrifices, all that worship with the hands was all put away, and we now had that veil in the temple that was rent in two pieces, rent from the top to the bottom. When Jesus died on the cross, it happened immediately. It was rent from the top to the bottom, and the way into the holiest, we'll come to this later in Hebrews, the way into the holiness was made open through what Jesus did there on the cross, so that we can now go directly to God. We don't need a priest anymore, or we do need a priest, but the priest is God himself, Jesus, God's Son. And what the Catholic Church does is that they make all of their ministers to be this priest, this person between God and man, where you can bring your sacrifices, or not sacrifices, it's money, they just want money, you can bring your money to, or your confessions to, or whatever, and that priest can pray for you, and etc. And not only do they use the living priest, but all the dead saints, and Mary, and every other imaginable thing that you can think of, all of these things are links between man and God, they teach, but not one person will ever have forgiveness of one sin anywhere in their entire life through those methods, because God has rejected them. Because God here teaches that only a priest that is made a priest by God will be a priest. We can't make a man a priest. We cannot put a man in position as priest between God and man. Only God could. And God never put any man in that position right now in the sense in which the Catholics have it. It is also true that God says there that all Christians are both kings and priests to God. And might have to dig into that a little bit to fully understand that. But not in the sense in which any human being takes a place between God and man, where a man comes to him with his problem and he in turn goes to God with the problem and makes an atonement for sin. There is no such thing anymore. We go directly to God with the things that when we have a problem in our lives, when we have sin, when we need forgiveness, when we need cleansing, we can go directly to God with that. And we find at the cross that God accepts us through the work that Jesus did on the cross, just like that. So, no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made an high priest, but he that said unto him, Thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. That's quoted from Psalm chapter 2 and verse 7. He who said that, Thou art my son, that's God the Father, also said, as he saith also in another place, Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now this is Psalm 110. I'm going to turn back there really quick. And we'll just quickly read the psalm. The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of the strength of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies. The people shall be willing in the day of thy power, in the beauties of holiness from the womb of the morning. Thou hast the dew of thy youth. The Lord hath sworn and will not repent. Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. The Lord at thy right hand shall strike through kings in the day of his wrath. He shall judge among the heathen. He shall fill the places with the dead bodies. He shall wound the heads over many countries. He shall drink of the brook in the way. Therefore shall he lift up the head. A Psalm of David, it says at the beginning. And Jesus quotes this passage. In the New Testament, the Lord said unto my Lord, sit thou on my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. So Jesus quoted this passage to the Pharisees, speaking of David. how David called Jesus, or the coming Messiah, Lord, when he was his son. But we find that God here, in speaking this prophecy through David of Christ, made this statement, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now, I'm not going to go into that tonight. After the order of Melchizedek, what does it mean? What is that? We're going to come to that in chapter 7. So we'll go through that then. Right now, all we are settling tonight is the fact that God made Jesus that high priest after the order of Melchizedek, and a Genesis figure of the Old Testament. So in verse 7, jumping back to talking about Jesus, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Now, this situation that we're talking of is recorded in the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And I'm just going to turn quickly to Luke and read a few verses. There is there's information added in a couple of the other Gospels. Not all the information is contained in this chapter. But in the 22nd chapter of Luke and verse 39, we'll read what it says here. And he came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said unto them, pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer, and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow. In a couple of the other Gospels, it tells you a little bit more, that he actually came back to his disciples three times and found them sleeping three times. But this is what happened that night when he went out to pray. He prayed that he was praying, I believe, that he could be freed from having to go to the cross. And in that prayer, he prayed that was what he wanted, but he didn't just want his will. He submitted himself to the Lord's will. And while he prayed in that prayer, so great was his agony that God sent an angel down from heaven to strengthen him, and perhaps to keep him from dying. Perhaps. Because the interesting thing is, as we read this verse in Hebrews, it's a little bit unclear. It doesn't really specify very clearly exactly what he is talking about. But listen again as I read it. Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared. Whatever Jesus prayed, according to this passage, God heard his prayer. Now, Jesus prayed to be delivered from death. But He also prayed in the same prayer where he prayed to be delivered from death, he also prayed, not my will, but thine. So he didn't make that prayer an absolute. But God says he heard his prayer, and whatever he did. I have heard some people say that what Jesus was praying was not to escape the death of the cross, but rather the death of that night, because Satan was trying to kill him that night before he got to the cross. I don't find any evidence whatsoever to support that doctrine in the scriptures. I don't know why some people teach it. But whatever happened, Jesus prayed to God with strong crying and tears. He was in the greatest agony that a person can be in, and God heard him, and he delivered him at least from his agony, sent angels to comfort him. But the fact that he went through these things, verse 8 tells us, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. So in spite of the fact that he prayed to God to be delivered from going to the cross, he still obeyed his Father and went to the cross. And through that obedience was the only way that God had that he could provide salvation for man. He had no other way. As far as we know, as far as all of heaven records, as far as we know, that was God's way. And he had no other way. And being made perfect, verse 9, being made perfect, that was through suffering. He became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him, called of God and high priest after the order of Melchizedek. There are many people who have taught many, many false doctrines throughout history about the Old Testament law and about the things contained in the Old Testament law. But the New Testament teaching is absolutely 100% clear. It leaves no room for argument. There is no room for any other doctrine. All of the things that were put out in the Old Testament that were concerned the temple worship and the ceremonial things, all of those things were finished and fulfilled in Christ, and we are not under the law of Moses. Not under the law of Moses. We do not seek to the law of Moses for information on how we should live or what is right and wrong. One of the things that helps to confuse us on that situation is that many of the things that were contained in the law of Moses, being the moral righteousness of God, being the commandments of God, and the things that God believes to be wrong versus right, and the things he wants us to do, are still things that we do, and the New Testament is very clear on those points, that these things are commandments of God. But outside of the things that you can find written in the New Testament that God tells us to do, there is not any other thing that you need to go back to the Old Testament to find out that God made a law about it. Nothing in the Old Testament that God made a law about that is not written or taught of in the New Testament is for the church. Jesus fulfilled those things. Now, that does not in any way make the Old Testament unimportant, and we can gain much knowledge sometimes about things that God likes, approves of, disapproves of, by reading the Old Testament and studying the lives of the people who lived back then and how they lived their lives based on God's word to them and so on. Many, many, many good things can be learned from the Old Testament. But the biggest thing in the Old Testament that we are going to learn from the Old Testament law is who was Jesus and what he did for us. And that is the reason that we have the law today. We have the law to look at the way God promised this Messiah would come and the way that he showed how he would be through all the ceremonial things that he gave the people of the Old Testament. And all of those things pointed to this Son of God who was going to come, who would be the eternal King and the eternal priest, the only author of salvation, the only way that any human being would ever find peace with God anywhere on earth, from Adam until the last day of earth. The only way of salvation was through Jesus Christ. Now he turns, after he says, called of God and high priest after the order of Melchizedek, he turns to the people and says to them, of whom we have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. I think that the last verses of this chapter fit better with what's coming in the next chapter. They don't really go with this chapter. They go with the next chapter in the thought process. And I would like to cover them in more depth than we have tonight anyway. So we are going to break with that tonight. And we will come back to this in a couple of weeks or whenever it is that I am back to speaking at church. I do believe that Don and Roy are on next Sunday. Is that right, Brandon? I am pretty sure that Don and Roy will be here next Sunday and the next Sunday. So, we're going to take a break for tonight.